Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. And on our next podcast, we have another special guest. We have a filmmaker, a director, a producer, and someone who owns her own production company. Please welcome Faiza Zaidi.
Hello. Hi, Sledge. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Faiza. How are you?
I'm good.
So what inspired you to become a filmmaker?
Where would I start? Should I start with my childhood? I mean, I think for me, I was very clear at a very young age. I mean, when I was, let's say about 8-9 years old, I was very fascinated by movies, television. And also I was a very emotional child. I was very expressive person as a natural child. And I always wanted to express my feelings because I felt like I have too many feelings. I need to express them. And I always did. I mean, in school, we would like play in plays and like, Shakespeare, Merchant of Venice. And then what's the other play of Shakespeare? Not Romeo and Juliet. I think it's Macbeth. And we used to play like a lot of these plays in school, drama and everything. And I knew that there was something in me that was really, really connected to art and expressing myself. I wasn't really exactly sure what it was. But then as I started to grow older, I would say around like 11 or 12, I started to realize, okay, I want to direct. Even if it's not directing, I knew that I want to be part of this. And funny thing is that you already know that my background's from Pakistan, so I grew up there until the age of 12. So at that time, when I used to live in school, when I used to go to school, there was no actually film industry in Pakistan. There was no way that was the norm or the mainstream career people would pick, because I mean the typical path would be, you know, doctors, engineers, lawyers, businessmen. So I think
it's
for
very
me,
much an Asian,
yeah, Asian kind of a setup. But I think, now that we say it's Asian, but when I look back into it, I think it's not necessarily Asian. I think it's just not the norm, because I've seen this even in the Western culture. Now that obviously I live in UK, I think I've seen that many people struggle to be, whenever there's something that's out of the box or something that is not mainstream or safe, whether that's Western culture, or Asian culture, I don't think it matters. I think what happens is that people start to, whenever something is different, something is not normal, people start to feel afraid of doing that. People are afraid for you to pursue that. Because they just don't know the outcome. It's not safe. You know what I mean? So obviously coming back to the childhood part, I mean, I kind of had that feeling, and there was no reference for me to actually, or any context or anything to kind of actually go into that. And plus I was young, but one thing I did knew, I had this really strong self-belief. Because I was always this child who was like, okay, if I want to do this, then this is what I want to do. I was quite like, I don't know, you can call it rebellious or you can call it whatever the word you want to give it. But I knew that if this is what I want to do, then I need to give it my all. And I really started to kind of believe in it, you know. I guess it was like my subconscious programming, which now I think about it. And, you know, when we like look into self-development work and a lot of things like belief system, now it makes sense. But actually as a child, I was already building that without realizing it. So when I was in school and, you know, we would have these conversations with children and everybody was like, what do you want to be? And I would say, I want to be a filmmaker. I would have like teachers and school kids like laugh at me, because they would be like Faiza, it's not possible, because it's not realistic, you know? And to me, that actually made me more motivated and made me more believe in, for someone, it could actually make them self-doubt it. But to me, it actually made me the other way around. It made me, okay, no, why is it not possible? You know, so I kind of trained my mind from that age without actually realizing it. So I used to like start writing on like whiteboards and things like, you know, and I used to like actually write on the wall saying, you know, I'm going to be this, I'm going to be that. And mm-hmm. I think the same kids who were like doubting and laughing, I think after like 3 weeks or 4 weeks down the line, actually started to believe in my own belief. And then everyone's like, yeah, we see you doing that. You know, so like I actually trained my own mind, but I also changed other people's perspective because I have built that self-belief in myself. So that's pretty much it. I mean, I without going too much into detail, how I became, I think that was my like starting point and how it started.
That's what inspired you in the beginning.
Yeah.
Well, you said you built this strong self-belief. How, tell me more about that. How did it develop? Was it through practice? Did you just have a sudden kind of stubbornness that it began with?
I think self-awareness. I think at a very young age, I knew who I was.
We're talking a very young age, right? So how did you...
I think I was lucky.
What age was this, 9, 10?
9, 10. You can even say 7, to be honest. I knew exactly seven. Who I was. I mean, it wasn't even like a question of, you know... It's like, of course, self-awareness is something I totally believe that you have to, it's like an everyday process. You have to grow and you have to realize, you know, you have to find that in you. But I think I knew my core. I think I knew who I was. I knew what I was capable of. I knew what I wanted. I knew, even if I didn't have a clear picture of what I wanted, I knew who I was. So I knew what my boundaries were. I knew what I can take and what I cannot, even at a very young age, even through my, from my parents or my relatives or anyone who would kind of interact with me. Everybody knew that, you know, this is Faiza and she can do this and she cannot, you know, like, I think I had established that positioning very early on in my childhood with my family and people around me, school, everything. So I think that kind of built on, because I think a lot of our training and a lot of our, a lot of the things we develop, it really starts from your childhood. And I think mine kind of got built up by itself. And of course, I do give credit to, you know, my family, for example. I mean, I'm not saying they're the perfect family, but I still give credit to my mom and my parents and like my siblings at that time or my cousins. Everyone kind of nurtured me a lot, gave me a lot of self-love. So I think that really helped. So I think environment does help. Having said that, my childhood wasn't the perfect childhood. I mean, coming from Pakistan, it was a very, very rough childhood as well. We saw a lot of hard times. We saw a lot of like difficulties and a lot of things. So I think having that affection around at the same time, going through the hard times made us stronger and made me stronger as a person to kind of develop that from an early on. Then obviously as I grew older, it became like almost like a habit, or it became just like a natural thing. To any life struggle that comes to my way, I know how to go through it. I think that's how it got developed.
And that's what ties in with your strong self-belief.
I think so. I think it's like a programming. Yeah. It became like a subconscious programming for me then.
Yeah. Interesting. So we talked a bit about why you became a filmmaker, and you told me a little bit about how you developed a strong self-belief. Talking more about that, this strong self-belief that you developed, how has it helped you in other aspects of your life, growing up as a teenager and into your life?
First of all, I like to say that from my perspective, I think self-belief really comes from self-awareness, and it develops through conditioning as you grow up and grow old. And as I already had that self-awareness, the self-belief just sort of like, you know, developed by itself. So even in my current life, as in I grew up in my teenage years or adult life, wherever there will be situations that will make me doubt, because doubt comes even for the most self-believable people. You know, life will throw at you things, failures, success, everything. But what matters is that whether you receive the success or the failure, you in the middle of it, it's not affecting you. Like I've seen a lot of people who I deal with, or friends, or just like family members, or people I just talk in general, and I noticed that a lot of people take failure to themselves. They think that just because they faced failure, it's who they are, you know. But I didn't let failure or setbacks or situations or hard times define me. I actually saw them either as an opportunity to grow, or I saw it as just another day, you know. At the same time, I didn't let even success define me. I didn't really let it affect me, because to me, success is not what you achieve. It's more about the process. It's more about what you're going through. And as long as you're enjoying yourself in it, I think that's what it is.
I think it's very much, again, something I've talked about in other podcasts, very much the growth mindset, just growing bit by bit, day by day. Mm-hmm. I call it 1% growth a day. And it's very interesting, actually. I recently started meditating again the last maybe few days.
Yeah.
And just something I was thinking about just before we started recording this podcast was that a lot of the things we do, the so-called good habits for our health and mind, let's say meditation, eating right, exercising, I realized today that a lot of the times we tend to do those things when we have time, when we're not too busy, when we're not too tired, and we find some time and we do those things. But really, it should be the other way around. We should be doing those things as a high priority first to protect us from being tired and busy and being unorganized and so on. So when I thought of it like that, then it made me realize that I'm going to make meditation a higher priority. So even this morning, for example, I woke up and I really didn't feel like meditating. It was just that first few minutes where you just feel really tired. And I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to lie in. I don't feel like meditating. I'm going to get another 20 minutes sleep. So what? But then, of course, it reminded me the whole point of this is the discipline. It's about the habit. You're slowly building the long-term habit into yourself. You don't get benefits just from meditating once. It's about every single day regularly. So it just accumulates. And I realized that I had to get up and meditate because even if I didn't feel like it, that was good for me in the long term. And to build on it for the next day and the next day.
I mean, like you just said, I mean, it's all about priorities. Once you realize what's the top priority for you, let's say for you now, meditation is becoming one. Then you know that it's like you know it's a must, and then you know what benefits it's going to give to you. So you're going to take actions for it, you know, and then it just becomes a habit with time. Like in my case, for example, when I started meditating, which was like obviously about since 2011, I've been meditating. And in the beginning, I started this process of meditation where I told myself, first of all, you have to realize why you're doing something. So whether that's meditation, exercise, or whatever it is, it has to trigger something in you, at least for me. So in my case, when I had to go through meditation, I had to figure out why I want to do meditation. I think your intention has to be clear. My intention was, I used to get stressed out a lot. I was an overthinker. And I was also someone who would, like I told you, like in my childhood, I was very expressive, very like passionate and very like, you know, almost to the point of aggression. I had this aggression in me. So I had to calm myself down. And meditation sort of like helped me in that process. But the reason why I started doing meditation was because it was hurting me. It was hurting myself. It was hurting me in my environment, my relationships, everything. And I realized that if whatever I want to do in life, if I can't control, but if I cannot stabilize my mind, if I cannot be stable in my mind, no matter what I do, no matter what I achieve, no matter what, I will always feel like a failure. So that was like a big awakening for me. And I realized, okay, Faiza, you need to get into this process of calming yourself because this is the key. And I think that became my top priority. Like meditation just became like, you know, like, I don't want to say religion. No, it's not religion, but more like it became just a habit, like brushing my teeth. And now it's like meditation is like, one thing that's just like for me, it's a must. Like I don't even have to think about it now. So
yeah.
So you're right. I think it's a point of it's actually about, you know, realizing what your priority is and what's your why in that priority, what's your intent in that priority, and what's pushing you to go towards that priority, you know. So
you said something about you had this thought that whatever you do, you're always going to feel like a failure. And since you did the meditation, have you learned to kind of accept yourself more?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, what I mean by saying, you know, whatever I do, I will feel like a failure. I think what I meant was that I would not really enjoy. I may achieve something, but I may not really enjoy it. And ever since I've started doing meditation, actually, I've learned to love the process more. So it's not about the achievement itself. It's just more about, you know, I mean, I've always been a go with the flow kind of a kid anyway, but I think more with meditation, I realize, okay, I'm not attached to nothing. I'm not attached to the outcome. Of course, I have my days. I have my days even today. Like, you know, I could be attached to something, but I think it really stabilizes my mind where I'm not thinking about the outcome. What I'm thinking about is just the moment, just the day.
Yeah.
Like this moment right now I have with you, I'm not thinking about nothing around me. All I'm thinking about is this second, this moment with you, you know? So I think that's what meditation really helps.
So it helps with your focus.
Yeah, the flow and the focus. Yeah. So everything is sort of like, you know, you're deep into the situation.
So tell me a time where you had to face some difficulties and challenges. Maybe it could be in your filmmaking career or other aspects, and how you overcame them. And did you get support from other people? Was it resistance from other people? And what did you do to overcome that?
Challenges are part of life. They come and go all the time in different places. But I will speak of one, which has been a big turning point, which actually led me to then open my own business. It was a few years ago, I would say about 2012. I won't name the people, but I wouldn't name the company. But I was actually involved in a production in Paris for a feature movie. It was like a big project. And what happened that the producer, the main investor who was kind of like my boss at that time, I was just working as a freelancer. So that was like my first big ever break, you know, in a million euro project and big production, co-production. And I was involved in this team where the team was good. Everything was good. The project was, you know, it was a good break, you know, by society's expectation. It was a great break. It was a wow break. But I learned through that process that this person who was my boss, he wasn't so nice. He wasn't so nice to people. He wasn't so nice to the environment. He was very aggressive, very angry person, and very not nice, you know. And the way he treated it wasn't nice. But that's okay. That's his karma, you say, his own journey. It's okay. It's completely okay. But what wasn't really okay was that he wanted me to do that exactly what he was doing to others, because I was in the exec role. So he wanted me to actually treat people exactly the way he would treat others.
Yeah.
And I wasn't okay with that. And he tried to, you know, push this card that he's my boss and he's like, you know, he's paying me and things like that. And, you know, and it put a lot of pressure on me from everywhere, like from him, the fact that I had this big break, and it had a lot of confusion for me, what I need to do next. What is it that I need to do? And, you know, but what was really important for me was that I don't want to lose my self-value just because somebody's telling me that I have to treat someone. Like, I cannot lose my own value in the process of becoming successful. So I told him that I can't talk to people like this. And he said to me, well, we're paying you. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm not comfortable talking to you. And then I took a stand, and in the end, I decided that I cannot work with people like this. I cannot treat somebody like this, even if I'm told to treat someone like this, because this is not my value. So it was a very hard decision for me. It was leaving that project was a big decision for me, because it was good money, it was good break, it was good, everything was, you know, big. But I left it at the point when it was a great break. But then that also shifted things for me, because then I came back to England and I realized, okay, I want to open my own production company because I want to add my own value into the way I want to work. Because at the end of the day, the person who you are is more important than what you achieve. And I don't want to lose myself in the process of achieving something. And I think even though it was a very hard time, even though it was a very, very hard decision, a lot of people went against it. Like, my friends were like, are you kidding me? You know, like, it was to that level, you know, some of my friends were like, wow, you know, and then even my family was surprised. But then I think everyone realized, no, okay, it makes sense what she's doing. So I think luckily everyone believed me and everyone kind of supported me afterwards. But I think that moment was a great shifting turning point, and also a very hard time to actually go through to make that decision, because I was in a vulnerable point. I was in another city. I probably didn't know what my future was going to be. I didn't have that confidence or self-belief, even though I had that self-confident belief anyway, but I didn't have the full self-confident belief to actually knowing what will come next. But I had to take that faith. I had to take that leap of faith. So I did. And that worked out quite okay, because then it gave me another direction in life, you know.
So it sounds like some of the strong self-belief you developed from a very young age came in very handy in moments like this.
Actually, that's true. That's so true. And, you know, Sledge, I think what's really, since we touched on confidence earlier, but what's the most important thing I learned, confidence also comes from faith. I think honesty and faith, I think faith is something huge. If you don't have the faith, knowing that whatever will happen will turn out to be okay, that's faith. And I think that's what confidence is for me. Like, that's how I see confidence, having faith. At that time, I didn't know if I'm going to get more projects. I didn't know if I will get opportunity like this. I don't know what's going to happen next. But I had this deep faith, whatever will happen, it will get taken care of. And it did. It always does.
You know, it's interesting with faith. I think so many things that we do, you know, they always say that if you follow this recipe, like a cake recipe, you're going to make the cake the way it should be. And most things, we can see the structure in place. We can see that this is the method you need to do to start a business or lose weight or get fit, whatever it might be. And I think the things that we haven't seen done before, or we're not sure if we can do it, or hasn't been done in our family before, those unusual, rare moments, that's when you really have to have faith, because it's not something that we necessarily have a template for or know anyone that's done something, so we don't have a template in front of us.
Exactly. Because it's fear of unknown. You know, a lot of us have fear of unknown, and that's where you actually need faith. You know, that's what visionaries are, visionaries, because they have faith.
And something that hasn't been done before.
They've never been done before. You know, look at Steve Jobs. I mean, was Apple done before? Like, he, you know, like, it was a complete new vision, you know, but it was faith that kept him going. And I think faith is something, it's like a vision. It's like a deep feeling. It's like a deep knowing. It's also like trusting the unknown. And I think when you trust the unknown gives you back. So that's, I think, confidence comes from that as well as honesty and other things, you know.
Interesting. It's trusting the unknown. That's the takeaway I took from what you just said. I like that.
Thank you.
Tell me about some of your role models in life, maybe some of your inspirations, whether they're in film, whether they are in other subjects, whether they're people in real life, in your actual day-to-day life, and it could be anyone throughout history.
Okay, so I think I will speak more recently, because while growing up, it's all history now. I mean, sometimes the people that resonate to you 5 years ago don't resonate to you anymore. So I think I will say for now who I'm sort of liking and following. Since at the moment, I'm very into developing my spiritual growth and really like focusing on healing a lot, on understanding myself. You know, this is something I always constantly do, but now I'm like more and more getting into that. And I feel like even though filmmaking has been sort of like my talent, I feel like now my bigger calling is more in terms of going after more like an authentic path. And I think since about a year or two, I went through a phase of depression. And after that, I discovered, I don't know if you know Wayne Dyer. I've been like, I came across his movie. I mean, I always knew Wayne Dyer while I was into spirituality, but what I came across was his movie, The Shift, about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
I actually saw that at Christmas time this year. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Last year.
Okay, perfect, yeah. Perfect. So yeah, I came across that movie about 2 years ago. And it's not that the movie is like a masterpiece or anything. It's just a simple film. But what it really inspired me, I think it inspired me because of the phase I was going through. You know, like sometimes we as humans, we start to attach to our ego so much, attached to things so much. And we actually, you know, get ourselves lost in identities and labels and things so much. And it really made me, I think it really helped me to come out of depression. So I would say that's probably Wayne Dyer, of course, I've been listening to him, but more that movie, that particular film that really inspired me. And then I follow a lot of content online that's whatever sort of like inspires me. There's no like specific set person, but I could say that particular movie really kind of, you could say it was like a turning point for me, even though it's a simple film, you know. But to me, it was beautiful. It came in the right moment that I actually went through shift. So
yeah, I agree. I saw it earlier this year. I think it may have been actually January, and it was recommended by a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And it really blew me away. Like you said, the point behind it just really made me think a lot for the next few days. And it was definitely something that influenced me. What about in terms of films? Were there any films in particular that inspired you to become a filmmaker? I just remembered, actually, because we met about 10 years ago. We actually met because we both went to meet someone about some editing work. And that's how we first became friends, actually, through filmmaking. And I think we met up afterwards and discussed editing and things.
Yeah, that's right. What inspired me for film? Like, which films inspired me? You know, I don't want to sound like, strange, but it's going to sound strange probably. But I don't think it was necessarily films that inspired me. Like, obviously, I like watching movies and things like that, but what really inspired me were every time I watch like a movie, and it's not a particular movie, it's more the emotions, because I'm very emotional and I get these feelings. So that really inspired me. Watching it through like visual medium, that really inspired me. Not necessarily what particular film it was, but more the fact that the feelings, you know, the feelings. And when I'm watching something, I feel like I'm as an audience, I'm getting a chance to express. So I thought, you know, it would be wonderful to express myself through storytelling, you know. And I consider myself as a storyteller. Like right now I'm telling a story. So I think I always felt like I wanted to tell a story. I have a lot of life I've experienced from childhood that I need to tell. I need to express it. Whether that would be film medium, like a podcast right now, could be anything, you know. But I think I have felt inside of me that internally that I have something to say. I have something to express.
Interesting. So you saw it as a medium to express yourself.
Yeah.
Rather than, exactly. Wow, I've seen this amazing film and I want to make films like that. Because that usually tends to be a big influence for a lot of filmmakers. But it was interesting you saw it kind of other way.
I mean, nothing wrong in that, but I think for me, if that would have been the reason, I think then it wouldn't be, because it wouldn't be the real reason, you know. But it works for others, and I think it's great. But I think for me, it wouldn't work. Because I'm a very internal process person, so I have to process things internally, you know, if that makes any sense.
I mean, it's interesting because I have a filmmaking background. I mean, we talked about it before, and a lot of that was inspired specifically by films. I think I just loved the idea of movies, and I had a lot of favorite movies before that. I think it was just my way of thinking, wow, you know, I want to make movies as well, just like these. And it really was just a very simple reaction to it. So I was just curious to see what inspired you. So tell me a bit about your morning routine. And this is a question we've asked others on this show, because just to point out that the morning routine seems to be a very important thing these days. Certainly in the last few years, it's much more talked about. So do you have a specific routine in the morning? I'm guessing you're going to tell me it involves meditation in some way.
Actually, my morning routine is very simple, nothing complicated. I wake up, first thing is meditation, nothing else. First thing, I sit in the bed, meditate for 20 minutes. Then I sort of like, you know, evaluate my thoughts. I try to be with myself for 30 minutes or something, just to kind of have that space with myself without actually getting into reality of life. And then just let my thoughts flow. And then after that, you know, I go about my business, you know, go, you know, get my breakfast, you know, get ready, depending on the day, what needs to get done. So I would say the routine would just be the routine part would just be the meditation part. And then obviously rest just sort of depends on the day, really. It's very, very simple. Oh yeah. And I make my bed. I do that. I never used to, but I've learned to do that. So I've become a bit more organized. So another habit I've started to incorporate now, that I make my bed every time I leave.
I have heard this before in personal development where they actually mention that. And the first time I heard this, I thought it was a bit of a joke, but they do say that's one of the things you should do first thing in the morning to have a sense of accomplishment, if you like, and to get that into your head. Yeah. Very interesting. So meditation and making your bed, two most important tips, mm-hmm. really. Mm-hmm. You're a very busy person. Obviously, you've got your filmmaking and production company. How do you relax? What kind of things do you do to relax and just take time off?
Actually, the only thing I do is relax, Sledge. It sounds really counterintuitive, but I actually focus more on relaxing than doing much. I know it sounds really strange, but I am busy.
So what do you mean by that?
I am busy. I mean, obviously, I have many projects going on and I'm thinking things and that, but I don't really rush myself. I don't really scatter my brain. I just sort of kind of, like I was saying, I stay in the moment and I just stay with the feeling. And I think I can be wrong, but I think I have the ability to work smart now. I've learned to do that. So I relax more. I let things come to me and then I take my actions rather than the other way around, you know. But in my thought process, I'm always visualizing what I want, you know, and then it's like strange. Things will come to me, which is very like different to I don't know what mindset it is, but it's all about like taking actions and everything.
Yeah,
I do take actions. It's not like I don't, but I let my thought process is more about, you know, waiting to actually think. Like my thought process is more about being with what I want first. And then once I know what I want, I let it sink in into my thought process. And then after that, I don't know, but it feels like the universe or the world or life, it just brings some sort of like opportunity because I thought about it and it comes to me. And I think it's probably to do with, I don't know if it's to do with meditation itself or just the fact that I kind of let my mind be not too scattered, that things just sort of help happen more in a flow, organic way. But I guess it's probably to do with the fact that I'm also trying not to get myself too attached to my ego. I don't try to control things so much. So I let it happen, you know, I let it like flow to me. So that's why I feel like I relax more than most people are, especially in our industry. Like in our industry, like people are very, very stressed. It's a stressful business. It's a stressful job. You don't have a normal routine. You have to wear extra hours. Sometimes you don't have jobs. So you have to work harder to grind. You have to, you know, get more jobs. But I've been fortunate enough to kind of find that balance sort of like in a natural way. And so far it's been working.
So in a way, you found a way to relax while you're doing tasks, mm-hmm. to stay in the moment, stay in the present, like you said, so you don't feel like you're exhausted or tired.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you don't necessarily feel that you have to have like a week off or 2 weeks off and a holiday and all those kind of things.
I mean, holidays is separate. That's just like taking a holiday.
I mean, would you still have a holiday? Would you still...
I don't know if holiday is the right word, but I like to travel. Because even if I'm traveling, I'm thinking about things or I could do this.
Okay, so that's a choice rather than relaxing away
from
work.
Yeah. Personally, I feel more relaxed when I'm staying home and I'm just meditating or just spending a day in the park or just going hiking or something like that. I find that more relaxing than actually going taking a holiday, because taking a holiday can be quite stressful. So rather than calling a holiday, I make it a travel trip where I can go and explore things, think of ideas. So I use it as an opportunity to travel, meet people, interact, discover new cultures. Mm. So I would say I travel more than taking a holiday. And for me, a real holiday is just being home and actually being with myself and figuring out what's next, you know?
Absolutely. Any favorite places you like to travel?
Well, you already know Israel is one of my favorite.
Oh, yeah,
Tel Aviv especially is my favorite city to travel. I've traveled there a lot in the last 4 or 5 years. It's become like a second home. For me, that's like my favorite city at the moment. But
It's not a place I've been to yet, but it's on my list.
Yeah, it's a great city. It's a city of flow, actually. Everything is flowing there, so I feel like it fits me perfectly. Like everything, things happen in a minute, very spontaneous. Everybody's very warm people, very, very nice, you know, environment, and people are very hospitable. I love it. I all the friends I have there, I feel like it feels like family, it feels like home. So that, I think for me, a place if I travel somewhere, I think it has to resonate somewhere to me. You know, not just a place I find beautiful and come back. I think I really need to feel the place. I really need to connect with people. I really need to understand them. I really need to understand the story, feel like I'm part of them, you know, and then come back and actually build that connection. So that's how I feel about Tel Aviv so far. There are other cities I've traveled and, you know, I've made friends in other cities too, but that's like the main, I feel like home there.
That's like your second home. Yeah. So tell me about any books that have been influential or inspired you or educated you or maybe pointed you in the right direction at key points in life.
I'm going to be honest. It's been a while. I haven't read that many books because I'm not a book reader like yourself. I'm more like an audio listener or more like listening to podcasts kind of a person. But and also I like to study life. I like to study people. I like to observe things. And I like to learn from experiences more than books. Like that's like me. Like I like to learn from my own experiences. And I also like to learn from life. Like life can teach you so much than having to just read books. But books are great if you want to develop some things and you want to just learn from someone else's lessons, which you could possibly apply in a different situation in your own. Like if you're going through a situation, similar situation, you can learn from those books that you can actually apply in your own situation. So it can be a good roadmap in that way. So I would say like there was a time around 2014 to 2015, 16, around that time, I was really working on personal development. And obviously you introduced me to a lot to personal development work. And it's been, I think, the book Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. You introduced me to that book. And that was a good read. I don't remember it anymore. I have to admit it because it's been a while. But I remember it helped me a lot in that way. And I think I could say that book. But I'm sure there are many books I probably read. But I usually when I read things, I don't necessarily read the whole book. I just read the things that are kind of applying to me in that moment. That's how I read.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, there's lots of books that I've read over the years, and some of them feel like a blur, but you just remember certain points from that, certain key points, and you may not remember certain details, but you remember there was enough of an influence from them that you can suggest to other people or feel like that it would be useful to someone else. Mm-hmm. I certainly think Think and Grow Rich is a massive book for me, and I think for millions of people around the world. It's one of the books I've always recommended to friends and mentioned to others over the years as well. But any audiobooks, you said you listen to a lot of audiobooks these days as well. So that would still count as books. I mean, any particular audiobooks that spring to mind?
You know, it's really strange, but I haven't started, but I'm really into at the moment. I kind of started, but I switched it off. But I'm really into, I really want to read Bhagavad Gita. I'm really intrigued by that. And also, I can't remember the name of the book, but it's more on, I'm really into listening to a lot of audiobooks by Alan Watts on Taoism. So I'm really curious to read a book on it. I haven't read it, but again, these are like my to-do list. So let's see. These are the two ones I'm intrigued by at the moment that I would like to look into. But I haven't because obviously I haven't got the time at the moment.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Certainly Alan Watts, I know about, and the Bhagavad Gita as well. So definitely let us know maybe in a future podcast as well. Mm-hmm. My final question I always ask is, what advice would you have? Normally it's really advice for kids, but what advice would you have to the younger Pfizer going back? And you can pick the age, 15, 20, any key point in life. What specific advice would you give to the younger version of yourself to help you maybe do things quicker or deal with certain situations better in life? And tying in with advice to your younger self, I was going to ask you, how would you tell the younger Pfizer to develop her self-belief? But you already told us that you developed a strong self-belief from a young age. Mm-hmm. What would you say to other kids from a young age to develop a strong self-belief? Because I think that's something that's missing for a lot of young people, and they have to develop that as they get older in life.
Mm-hmm. So basically, we're asking two questions here. One is what I tell myself, and second is
advice to yourself.
Advice to myself, and the second question is to younger kids, right?
Yeah, okay. But specifically to develop self-belief.
Sure. For other kids. Okay. let's come to the younger Faiza. I will come to the younger Faiza. Obviously, Faiza has been young in different stages, but I will go back really into the childhood part from 7 to 10. Yep. Personally, I have no advice to give. I actually have advice to take from this young Faiza. Because every time I've went through hard times or struggle, that young Faiza reminded me who I am. So if there is something I really need to tell that young Faiza, it would be thank you. Thank you for being you. Thank you for being yourself in a place where nobody was able to be themselves. And thank you for having the courage to be yourself, because it's not easy. And thank you in every way, you know, embracing life. So whenever, as we grow older as people, we develop more fears, you know, we lose courage at times because we have more failures and more fears get developed and more experiences and more traumas. But that younger Faiza has always reminded me that, you know, this is who you are, you know. So thank you. That's what I would say to that young Faiza. And
wow. I didn't expect that answer, but it just underlines that the young Faiza really did have amazing self-belief.
Yeah, probably more than I do right now. No, I'm joking.
Probably, yeah.
Because, you know, children, especially, I mean, not just the younger Faiza, I think children are fearless because they don't have that much experiences. They don't have that much fears developed at that early age. It's the conditioning that makes us, you know. So I think that...
And they haven't been told no too many times
either. Yeah, and they're taking risks. I was way more a risk taker probably then. I'm still am. But that younger Faiza was probably more because she had nothing to fear. She had nothing to lose, you know. And it was basics, but it was brave. It was bravery, you know. And I think it would be patronizing for me to tell that Faiza what you should be doing. No, I think it was beautiful what it was, you know. So I love that Faiza, and I really respect that Faiza, and I would love to learn. So I think that's something I would love to learn. And coming to the other question, what advice I like to give kids to build this self-belief? Is that what you had in mind?
Specifically, yeah, generally, but specifically to build self-belief.
Mm-hmm. Again, I don't want to sound patronizing to children because I think children are really pure. I think they really know what they want. I think as children, we are very pure. I think we are smart already. All we lack is experience probably. But when it comes to self-belief, I think we have it. I think as children, everybody has it. But if I were to give advice, I think I have few in mind at the moment. Whichever stage you're in, whether that's, you know, early from 7 to 8, 10 or your teenage years, I think one would be to never forget to listen to yourself. Never, ever forget to listen to yourself. Like, respect the people around you, respect the advices that are thrown at you, and respect your parents and whatever people are telling you. Respect that, listen to it. But always listen to your core. Like, whenever you can, find that truth in you, find that inner you. And by inner you, I don't mean the voices that's in our head, because that's also not us. That's probably conditioning of our society, parents, everyone else. But I mean that deep inner knowing that everyone has. Listen to that, you know, because there's so much people can tell us, teach us from the experiences, and it's great wisdom. We can learn from it, but we need to separate that. We need to take that away from us, and we really need to stick true to us. So I think...
So in a way, the voices that come from within you.
Yeah. Staying true to you, right. Listening to that voice. And I think that...
So how do you develop the confidence then? How do you develop the confidence to listen to yourself? Because that's the hardest thing for a young person when you're hearing lots of voices and lots of people telling you stuff and giving you the right advice, but then you have these self-doubts and these moments of, am I doing the right thing, or am I just doing this to please other people or whatever? But how do you develop that confidence?
I think by being really honest with yourself. I think confidence to me is honesty, you know. if you can, if whether you're a child, you're an adult, whichever stage you are, and if someone is struggling with that confidence, I think really being on, and not the honesty of telling yourself a story. That's the difference. Sometimes we're told a story and we believe that story. So let's say if somebody told us you're a failure, we start believing we're a failure. No, I don't mean that. What I mean is really, really listening, really, really listening to our honesty, the honesty that really speaks to us, you know, that really inside of us. And that needs to develop at a very early age. That needs to be practiced at a very early age. So if someone's young and they can really feel this feeling that this is something they really need to do, the way they can actually build that confidence is actually taking action on it. Even if that action leads to failure, that's okay. But just taking that action in itself will build that confidence. I think that would be my advice to that's how I would explain how the confidence can actually come in that situation. Because others may say, oh, it's a failure, but you know you actually took the courage and you did it. That in itself will give you the confidence. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So it ties in a little bit with habit as well.
Yeah.
It has to be a bit of a habit. Yeah. So you have the courage to make the decision and just keep repeating that. It's hard, but you keep repeating that.
Or just taking a small action.
It builds a confidence.
Exactly. Or just taking a small action, you know, like if you're a child or an adult or anything, or anyone, and you feel that there is something you're doing, this applies to me as well, because, you know, everybody needs that courage in every step of their life. Even if you're confident, you can always become more confident, you know, it never stops growing. And I think, like, for example, today, if there is something I really want to do and I'm feeling I'm lacking confidence, then the only way I can surpass that fear is by taking small steps, taking little steps towards it. And then it just becomes like a muscle. Like you just said, it just becomes like a natural muscle that grows, you know? So I think that's what develops confidence, little actions.
Absolutely. Just baby steps. Mm-hmm. A journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step, mm-hmm. right?
Exactly.
Wow. This is the best thing hearing your story, Faiza. And thanks for spending this time with us. On our first podcast together. It's been great to have you. So thank you again. Any final thoughts or words you want to express?
I think another advice that, I mean, it's not necessarily just a general throw at, would be that whatever life situation throws at people or at ourselves, you, me, anyone, good, bad, if one can remain... like if one can stay with it, I think then you can really grow. Like sometimes what happens is when bad situations come in our life and they make us want to escape reality, and what we're doing is we're running away from growth. But if we stick to it, if we stick to that, whether that's a good phase or a bad phase, if we just stay there, remain there and go through it all in, I think then we grow, and because we go through the pain, so we grow more.
Yeah.
And that's what makes us stronger. And actually that also adds to the confidence. So I think that also helps develop the confidence part. So I think I would like to also add that in as a piece of my little wisdom that I've learned.
Excellent. It's always good to hear. And the main thing with these podcasts and Serving First is hearing people's stories, seeing and hearing some of the difficult things they've gone through, and advice to other people as well. So thanks again, Faiza, for joining us on this podcast. And thanks for your very inspirational words and certainly tips on developing self-belief, which I think will be very useful for many people listening. And until next time, thanks again.
Okay, thank you so much. Thanks for this platform, and thank you for thinking of me. And I really, really appreciate, and I really hope whatever we discussed, I open my heart out, and I really hope whoever's listening, it really connects to them and it resonates in some way. And thank you so much, Sledge.
Oh, and one more thing. Where can we contact you or see some of your work or get in touch with you?
Well, people can go on my Instagram and reach me from there. Yeah. I mean, my Instagram is very early on, but I'm starting to build content there. But if anyone is intrigued and wants to reach me out, then they could just contact me through Instagram, DM me.
Great stuff. And yeah. Your production
and then you'll
company?
See my website, my production company website. So yeah. Through Instagram, they can look it up. You know, it's easier that way.
It's all there. Great stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll put the links below the podcast as well. Thanks again, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to our fifth podcast with the filmmaker Faiza Zaidi. Until the next podcast.